U.S. versus Moskop, 11-38-69. Ms. Christensen?
May it please the Court, Counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant, Edward Moskop, in this matter. Our system of sentencing recognizes that no person is 100% good or 100% bad.
Well, present company except.
Of course, Your Honor. I think the system does recognize that. Always right, I think, is what they call it. The statute considers this and instructs the district court on how to balance the good and bad in each individual case and individual offense. In this case, the district court gave very little consideration to the mitigation arguments that Mr. Moskop made on his behalf at sentencing. Specifically, the court committed procedural error by failing to address substantially four arguments defense counsel made in mitigation. The first was that the guidelines took into account all factors that justified the higher-than-guideline sentence as found by the district court. Mr. Moskop received enhancements for amount of loss, the number of victims, the vulnerability of the victims, violating a judicial order, using sophisticated means, violating securities law, and violating the money laundering statute. These are the same factors that the district court considered in imposing a sentence of 240 months, which was substantially above the 135 to 168-month guideline range. The court said, for a 20-year period, you schemed, connived, and acted to defraud these vulnerable persons. That's exactly what the vulnerable victim enhancement applies to. The court said, you repeatedly manipulated, defrauded, hoodwinked, and stole from more than 25 victims. Mr. Moskop received an enhancement for exactly that. You used your knowledge of the investment and securities world to your benefit. He, again, got an enhancement for violating securities law. In addition, he created false documents and made lulling payments to his victims, and that's considered under the sophisticated means. All of these were adequately considered by the guidelines, and the district court did not advance any additional information that would justify such a sentence so much higher than the guideline range in this case. Secondly, the court failed to consider unwarranted disparities. While the court did consider the specific case brought to its attention, the Huelsman case, missed the point the defense counsel was trying to make. Defense counsel was not asking for the same sentence that Huelsman got, which was 87 months. Counsel was asking for a sentence within the guideline range for Mr. Moskop, which was higher than 87 months. The guidelines, as this court is aware, should be the starting point in sentencing. However, the court in this case forced the statutory maximum to be the starting point, noting several times that the government was asking for the statutory maximum and that asking defense counsel to argue off of that. This procedure created disparity because in most cases, the judge will start with the guideline range and consider why that guideline range is not appropriate. Essentially, we flipped it on its head, and the court considered why 240 months, the statutory maximum, was not appropriate. The third issue raised by Mr. Moskop was the failure to consider the need to pay restitution to victims. This was raised in Mr. Moskop's sentencing memorandum, and while it was not necessarily a principal argument at the sentencing hearing, it's something the court should have considered given that the entire sentencing hearing was based on the loss to these victims and the need for them to have restitution paid to them. By sentencing Mr. Moskop to 240 months, it essentially guarantees a life term of imprisonment for someone who's in his mid-60s.
In this case, yeah, because of that, it's just not a significant factor, it seems to me, because he's not going to have much ability to pay whether he gets out, earlier or later. This is a significant restitution award, and his ability to work, given that his license is suspended.
Right, and I don't think even if his license hadn't been suspended, he would be able to work in his field.
Right.
But the longer the sentence, the more likely that he is never going to pay any restitution, significant restitution, and that's a factor that could be considered. And this court is aware, as in most circumstances with this amount of restitution, very little of it is ever paid back because defendants don't have the resources after being convicted and going to prison.
Right, that's why I'm suggesting it's not really a major factor.
Yeah, and he didn't put any factual, he didn't even discuss what he potentially could have done in order to pay back the restitution.
Correct, Your Honor, and we recognize the Chapman case that was decided after we filed our brief, detailing that defense counsel should put on some facts. And the only facts were, of course, in the pre-sentence report. It was not a major factor, but it was one factor the court should have considered.
Right. So then Chapman kind of closes the door on that argument.
Yes, yes. The fourth argument is that the court failed to consider the cooperation that Mr. Moskop gave to the government in determining this fraud. This is a different cooperation than we see in most cases where someone's cooperating against another person and seeking a reduction in his own sentence. Mr. Moskop was not doing that for a Rule 35 or a 5K motion. As soon as he made contact or law enforcement made contact with him, he was honest and gave them information that they asked for, gave them information that they didn't ask for, and provided the names and information for victims that the government had no idea about. And in addition, let the government know about an additional scheme that he had perpetrated through his business that they would not have found out about without his advising them of it. He offered to plead guilty to an information, which was refused. He was ultimately indicted and pled guilty to both counts in the indictment without a plea agreement from the government. This was more than your average acceptance of responsibility. The government argues that the district court took this into consideration because the court gave him acceptance of responsibility, having reduced his, and this is quoting the government, having reduced his offense level 3 points for acceptance of responsibility, and having listened to defense counsel's brief discussion of the issue at sentencing was enough. The government is essentially arguing that the guidelines are good enough for considering evidence in mitigation, but when you consider evidence in aggravation, the judge should not follow the guidelines and go much higher.
Well, the judge acknowledged his acceptance of responsibility and said he had clearly expressed heartfelt remorse after getting caught. When he looked at other, mitigating factors, he did point out that he was a good father. It's just that cutting the other way were the number of aggravating factors in the nature of the fraud and who he defrauded and the length of time and the length to which he went to defraud these various victims, targeting these victims who were elderly and in poor health.
I agree, Your Honor. And we're certainly not saying, as I said, he was all good. There were aggravating factors in this case the district court should have and did have considered. We're arguing that the court should have considered all of that evidence. And while he said you accepted responsibility and you're showing remorse, the court did not talk about the level of cooperation that Mr. Moskop had given prior to pleading guilty, prior to being indicted.
So you think the court should have gone through all the details you have? Is there any requirement that the court do that, any case you can point to?
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not. I think that...
You want to save a little for rebuttal?
Oh, yes, Your Honor, I do. I will save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Wigington?
Good morning. May it please the court, Judge Williams, Judge Sykes, Judge Bauer, counsel. The district court followed proper sentencing procedure in imposing a substantively reasonable sentence under the horrific facts of this case. The defendant in this case got a just sentence, a sentence that was based upon numerous aggravating factors that far outweighed any mitigating factors, as Judge Williams just pointed out. This man instituted or imposed a financial death sentence on many elderly individuals in the state of Illinois. He not only took their money, but he destroyed their trust, he destroyed their peace of mind, and in many instances, he destroyed their health. The record is replete with a very careful sentencing hearing of testimony from 15 victims and numerous impact statements of what Mr. Muskoff did to a number of his closest family members, his closest friends, his neighbors, and then he took it further and went after their children. In this particular case, the district court took particular concern over a two-day sentencing hearing to exercise its discretion properly and very carefully, and took great strides to ensure that the court carefully considered, and I'm quoting the court, when the court said he carefully considered the arguments of the defendant in mitigation and the arguments of the government. And the court very carefully considered the 3553A factors. The court also said at the sentencing hearing that he had received and reviewed and considered in very detail a very detailed PSR, the defendant's objections to the PSR, and the government's response, and there were rulings made on each of those objections. Both sides had filed lengthy sentencing memorandums prior to the date of sentencing, anticipating that there would be a substantial upward variance in this case. The court held a two-day sentencing hearing, and the court made detailed findings in the transcript with respect to why this case should result in a 20-year statutory maximum sentence. And the court further...
Is that what you asked for?
Actually, no. The court actually tempered and expressed and showed its discretion because I asked for a 30-year sentence. We asked that this case be a 30-year maximum sentence, as many of the victims did when they testified, 20 years on count one and 10 years on count two, to run consecutively, as the Fifth Circuit affirmed in Pizzolatto down in New Orleans in a similar matter.
So you actually affirmatively asked for 30 years. You didn't just indicate that that's what the victims wanted.
Well, I don't know if I can't recall if I affirmatively said 30 years. I asked for the statutory maximum sentence under the case.
Well,
and
I years.
Felt that I thought it was 30 years, Your Honor, but that's what I was seeking.
Okay.
That's what I thought this case deserved, and I still to this day believe it deserved 30 years. It certainly deserved 20 years. This man spent from 1990 to 2010 stealing from many individuals. And these were not rich people. These were not people like many of Madoff's clients who could afford to lose million. These were hardworking people. These were teachers. These were factory workers. These were maintenance men at District 187. These were carpenters. One was a farmer. They've lost their farm and went into foreclosure. And now they're still paying deficiency judgments on a farm they no longer own. That's the Nuffman family, Richard and Lois Nuffman, who ended up losing $323,000 in this scheme.
And there was that man dying from cancer.
You have Mr. Rivera. You have Ray Rivera, who lived three doors down from the Muskoffs for years. And he's dying of cancer. He's diagnosed of cancer in 2002. And Mr. Muskoff is still continuing to steal from him. In fact, one of the legitimate investments that Muskoff made for Mr. Rivera was a $17,000 insurance product, an annuity, that when it came due, when it matured, rather than give the dying Mr. Rivera his money, he convinced him to roll it over into a fictitious account that never existed. When Mr. Rivera died, and this is in the record, under Ms. Rivera's testimony, Mr. Muskoff went to the funeral and assured her at the funeral that she would be well taken care of because of her husband's investment, when he knew at that time there was no money that existed. And what did he do after that? It wasn't enough, as I said in the record, to financially rape this family once. Then 3 months later, he went to her kitchen table and convinced her to put more money in. And then what did he do the next year in 2006? He went after their son, who retired from Sears Department Store.
He was a man of consistency, I'll have to say that.
He was consistent, absolutely. He was a financial predator, Your Honors. He went in 2006, he then went after their son, and that's in the record as well.
Doubt whether it's necessary for you to convince this court of the further deprivations of the defendant.
The deprivations here are just so extensive, Your Honor, that I believe that's why Judge Steele, who's very careful and said he very rarely imposes an upward variance in this regard, but this case cries out for it.
Gotcha.
The guidelines do not adequately take into account the severe financial loss. It does not take into account the physical manifestation of emotional harm. We have people who have been diagnosed with lupus. We have people who have shingles. We have people with severe depression.
I think you've made your point.
Thank you, Your Honor. Any further questions?
I don't think so.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr.
I appreciate the time.
All right. Ms. Christensen, how much time? 2 minutes?
Rehabilitate your man in 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think that we are not ignoring the facts in this case because we can't ignore the facts in this case. I'm not excusing what Mr. Moskop did. I know from personal experience that it is not by far the worst fraud that this court has seen, nor the worst fraud that I have seen. However, it is the worst fraud that the victims have seen, and Mr. Moskop deserved to be punished for that. However, he also had mitigation that the district court failed to consider adequately, and that's what we're asking this court to remand for resentencing for. Unless the court has further questions.
We don't have any further ones. Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Thank you, both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.